The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
With Earth's temperature continuing to edge upward, the fear of global warming is also rising. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to talk to a UWM scientist who's getting close to a method of capturing and reusing carbon dioxide before it escapes into our atmosphere. Joining us in the studio is Ying Li, UWM Assistant Professor of Mechanical Engineering in the College of Engineering and Applied Science. Welcome, Ying. Good to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Tom. Very nice to be here and introduce my research.
And it's really fascinating because anyone who's paid any attention at all to this issue of global warming knows that one of the basic causes behind the problems we're having with temperature is too much carbon dioxide.
That is true. So as we know that, actually I can have a number for you. Currently, the annual emissions of carbon dioxide globally is about 40 gigatons. Okay, 40 gigatons, 1 giga is 1 billion. So that's a huge amount of CO2 emitted every year into the atmosphere. So that is the major contribution to the global climate change.
Okay. And the carbon dioxide, of course, comes from many different sources.
Yes. So the most significant sources are fossil fuel combustions, okay, like power plant, you know, transportation, vehicles, industries, et cetera.
So burning largely fossil fuels that when you burn them, the carbon dioxide is a byproduct of that process.
Yes. Okay. So they're emitted, for example, from a power plant, you know, smokestack into the atmosphere after the coal combustion. Okay. So, you know, that's the idea is how can we, you know, can we prevent the emission of CO2 into the atmosphere? Okay.
And that's where your research gets really interesting because you're working on a process to do just that, to try to capture that carbon dioxide before it goes up and contributes to the problem of global warming.
Yes.
Tell us how it works.
Sure. I think it's really an interesting idea, you know, when you think of when we burn fossil fuels like coal or natural gas, right, and then with air, then you produce CO2 and provide energy to us. Okay, so my way is exactly the reverse way. We recycle the CO2 back into fuels. Okay, that sounds really interesting, but it is scientifically also challenging. Okay, so to do that, we come up with an idea of so-called artificial photosynthesis. Okay, to mimic the mother nature of natural photosynthesis, because we know for photosynthesis, the plants or organisms, they absorb CO2 and water, and then under sunlight they grow, again biomass. So that's the millions of years later, this biomass they decay and then becomes fossil fuels. Okay, so my way is to expedite this process, to make it faster, because now we're consuming energy in a much faster, speed than the Mother Nature can provide us, the fossil fuels.
Because no matter how many rainforests we have, there aren't enough trees or plant life to go ahead and absorb all that CO2. And as you say, through photosynthesis, actually produce oxygen and produce a very positive result.
Yes. Okay. So our the technology, the key is to use a effective photocatalyst, which in a nanoscale, a very small size, okay, which can efficiently absorb, sunlight, the photon energy, and then convert the photon energy into chemical energy. For example, if we have a metal oxide semiconductor like titanium dioxide, okay, then with titanium dioxide absorbs sunlight, there will be electrons, you know, excited, and those electrons have, you know, certain energy, then which can react with carbon dioxide and water. Okay, then we can produce carbohydrates like methane or methanol. Those can be directly used as fuels. So that's the idea of, you know, artificial photosynthesis.
And the beauty here is that you're capturing that carbon dioxide after it already has been produced and in the process created energy. So actually you're looking at a system that would allow us to create energy twice out of the same fossil fuel.
Yes.
Indirectly.
Or, in the scientific community, we call it carbon neutral fuels. Because capture CO2, convert it into fuel, and then, of course, later on you want to burn the fuel, right, again, and then it will release CO2. But then you capture the CO2 again and kind of like this recycle, and you can imagine the end result is you do not produce any net emission of CO2. So this is called carbon neutral. And then the traditional fossil fuels are carbon positive, which means they produce a certain amount of CO2.
And the downside of carbon positive is that we already have too much of it out there.
Yes.
In the atmosphere. So let's go back to the basic process here. If you're operating a great big power plant, generating megawatts of energy, that is going to warm the homes in a city, keep the lights on. You've got this great big power plant with a giant supply of coal outside, or maybe a giant pipeline that is connecting the natural gas feed into that plant, and you start burning that fuel. At what point do you actually, or how are you actually able to go ahead and keep that carbon dioxide that's produced in the burning process from going up the chimney and literally, up in the sky?
Okay, so then we can apply the material we have developed to, add an additional device in a flue gas passage before, this exhaust emitted from the stack. Okay, during that device, okay, the materials we developed can absorb CO2 first, capture CO2 onto the material, and then in the meantime, if we can shine sunlight somehow onto these materials, so then the CO2 will be converted into fuels automatically in the same time. So that's really convenient in a process. It's not difficult to do.
So right now, how far along is your research in replicating that process so that it might be of use to all of those power plant operators that are generating these billions of tons of carbon dioxide?
This research currently is still at in the fundamental research stage, although the idea is fascinating, and we have to admit that it is a really challenge task. So that's why the National Science Foundation is investigating a lot of money, a lot of funding to support research in this new but very promising area.
Well, and we should note for our listeners that the National Science Foundation has found your work so important that they've given you a $400,000 grant. You're actually one of only four scientists at UWM over the years who's been awarded a career award from the NSF because of the unique nature of the work that you currently are involved in, the research work.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do appreciate the funding.
So we should congratulate
NSF.
You, first of all, on that. That's quite an honor.
Thank you. Yes, NSF is very good in supporting, far-reaching, broad impact, but in its beginning, stage research programs. So I hope that maybe in a few years after, because my career award is 5-year project. So after 5 years, I hope I can, because we're getting closer and closer to, commercially viable technology to do this CO2 conversion to fuels. So after 5 years, hopefully we can, get to a point that maybe then the industry would be interested in investing money, you know, to scale it up. The government first is to invest in fundamental research. Then the next phase to scale up, we need support from the industry, like, you know, the power companies, power plants to do so.
Well, the power companies, of course, are likely to say, sounds like a good idea, but is it going to be expensive? Is it going to add a lot to the cost of our customers' bills?
Yes, it will. But my research idea compared to the conventional carbon capture and storage technology, CCS, or carbon capture and sequestration, is simply capture CO2 from the flue gas and then concentrate the CO2, like pure CO2, then pressurize the CO2 and then liquefy CO2 into a liquid and then inject CO2 down deep underground or undersea, and hopefully, sequester this CO2 there for hundreds of years. But that process is expensive.
And it's being done, but it costs a lot of money, right?
Yes, but there's also long-term uncertainties about this technology because, you know, you don't know after 1,000 years what will happen to this CO2 underground. There may be chances that the CO2 will re-emit into, you know, the atmosphere. Okay, so then compared with this traditional technology, my technology is directly convert CO2 back for immediate use. So there's no downside for this reuse.
Because in the storage of carbon dioxide, the challenge or the difficulty there is that you don't really get anything for all the money you invest in locking that CO2 up. And stuffing it away back down, again, as you point out, either down in deep rock or in the ocean. In your research, you're suggesting that why put it down 1,000 feet below us if it can be turned into another form of
exactly,
energy?
Exactly. So that's the reason my technologies would be more cost effective than the traditional ones. And that's why it's also hopeful. Because you can also imagine that in the future, when we're running out of fossil fuels, because currently the consumption, energy consumption is so huge, and it's increasing every year, there will be a day that we're close to the point that all the fossil fuels will run out. So then my technology of capturing CO2 and convert CO2 into fuels will be a really important energy technology at that time.
Ying Li, where did the idea for this process first come about? Has it been something that we've known is possible theoretically for a long time?
Theoretically, it is known for probably 4 decades. The idea was introduced by a Japanese research group in 1970s. Okay, then, but during that time,
in the height of the oil embargo crisis, right?
Yes, yes.
Where the gas prices shot up, and in fact, there was a shortage of oil because of the fashion in which many of the Arab countries had formed a cartel and essentially had a lock on oil and oil supply.
Yes, so that's the reason, people have discovered this, new idea at that time. But then later on, because the oil, we have found more oil reserves, the oil prices went down, then the research is like, maybe it's not the company, don't think it's worthwhile to invest in this research. Only until recent few years, and because of the recent oil rises again, oil price rise again, and so then there is an international attention of doing and looking into this CO2 conversion research again. So it's very a popular area right
so
now.
So as fossil fuels become scarce or the price of those fuels go up, that's when the world becomes more interested in some of these new novel approaches dealing with what, as you predict, will ultimately be and another energy crisis when those supplies go back down.
There will be, Yes.
How about fracking? Right now, the U.S. is, in the last few years, again, in a much different place than it was back in the 70s, because we've discovered the ability to extract oil and natural gas from rock that we just simply couldn't get to because we didn't have the technology. Now we do, and suddenly it seems we're awash again in fossil fuel that we didn't think we could tap into. Do you think that's going to have any impact on the appetite for this new approach to creating
yes,
energy?
Yes, my approach can also apply to natural gas burn power plants, for example, because the reason the boom of shale gas is because natural gas emit less carbon dioxide on a mass basis compared to coal. So then we can emit less amount of CO2 if we switch from coal to natural gas. So that's the current energy profile in the United States is the use of natural gas is increasing, but then the use of coal is decreasing. But my technology is just deal with CO2 capture. Either it's from coal combustion or from natural gas combustion.
So it works either way. So from your standpoint, as long as you're burning either one of those fuels, it's going to produce the product that your system or your process can use to, first of all, keep the CO2 from going into the atmosphere, but maybe more importantly, being able to generate another form of energy.
Yes. And I would also like to mention one point is recently the Environmental Protection Agency has proposed a regulation for carbon emissions from power plants, either coal or burn power plants or natural gas power plants. And so it was proposed a couple of months ago in September 2013.
And very controversial. A lot of the power companies aren't crazy about this.
Yes. All the coal-fired power plants has the most complaints because, this new regulation would literally shut down all the new coal-fired power plants. So only the natural gas power plants will survive from this new regulation. So that's why then if we want to build a new coal-fired power plant, we have to use this carbon capture technology to prevent the carbon emissions from into the atmosphere. So then I'm glad to see that this legislation will be in place soon so that my technology will be really useful and also we can attract the industrial support to develop this technology together.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack. Joining us in the studio, Ying Li, UWM's Assistant Professor of Mechanical Engineering, talking about a new process that he's working on that would convert carbon dioxide emissions back into fuel. Ying has received a $400,000 career award grant from the National Science Foundation because of its interest in this intriguing possibility of not only keeping the bad stuff from going up the chimney and into the atmosphere, carbon dioxide, but actually reusing the result of that carbon dioxide through chemical processes and creating another form of usable energy. Ying, as we take a look at the research that you're doing right here in Milwaukee on this issue, let's talk about big picture. How does the work you're doing here compare with the interest or like-minded research that's taking place in other parts of the world? Are there other scientists looking at the same process?
Yes. Because as I said, this is a global interest of developing alternative sustainable fuels. This is a fascinating idea. So more and more people are doing this right now. However, currently I think the research groups in Europe and Japan are leading research in this area. Unfortunately to us, the researchers in the United States are kind of, I hope that we invest more in this area. because maybe of a different culture of, you know, for environmental issues caused by energy generation. So usually Europe and Japan are leading in this area. But I'm glad to see more and more, you know, U.S. researchers are doing this also.
What about China? What, if any, interest does China have in this process? Because if you look at the countries who use the most amount of bad coal, the coal with great high sulfur content that produces a lot of very, very negative emissions, including carbon dioxide, you would think that would be the first country that would look for ways to limit the amount of CO2 leaving those many, many coal-fired plants that have been built across China.
From the research side, I think I have noticed that in the recent few years, the research in CO2 conversion to fuel from the Chinese researchers are, you know, increasing at a very amazing, you know. So it's
because they have serious air pollution problems as a direct result of all the coal burning that's taking place in that country.
Yes. There are different, a lot of issues with air pollutions currently in China. They're facing like particulate emissions, toxic air pollutants, and as well as these greenhouse gas CO2 emissions. So I think they are looking at those issues one by one, and CO2 will be, I would say, the next interest for them.
When you look at the process, and you mentioned that it's a few years away before you believe that we could see a workable system tested on a power plant. We're not there yet, but you're doing that fundamental research that proves that this process can work. What has to happen between now and a few years from now in your research to actually make this a viable option for power companies to consider?
Okay, so that's the novelty of my research. My career award is to develop a unique material that can work at flue gas conditions. Because currently, the research of CO2 capture and conversions are separate. So there are a certain group of people only, you know, investigate how to capture CO2 effectively. Then the other group of researchers just investigate how to convert CO2. And then by converting CO2, I mean they used pure CO2 from already captured sources. Okay, so then you can see there's a gap in between these two research. In order to commercialize this technology, it is better that we can directly capture and convert CO2 at flue gas conditions, which is much different from the ambient or room temperature.
So theoretically, we know it can be done, but your work is looking at practically applying it to those smokestacks.
It is possible to apply this, but also a fundamental research at the flue gas condition means the temperature of the flue gas is higher than room temperature or atmospheric temperature.
How hot are we talking about?
It's 150 degrees Celsius or 300 degrees Fahrenheit. So the chemical reactions, kinetics, will be completely different from room conditions. So that's why there are a lot of unknowns. What will happen at that condition? Will these materials be more effective? And actually, based on our preliminary results, we do see the material we have developed is more active at flue gas conditions than conventionally people, you know, have done in room conditions.
How do the power companies, the energy companies, how have they reacted or responded to the research that you're engaged in?
Yeah, I think they are very interesting in this research. Every time I present my research at conferences, so there are many companies and people, they ask me questions, also the same question, how how soon can we use this technology? It seems they cannot wait. So I think that's I'm very glad I can work on this challenging problem, but hopefully within a few years to give a solution and answer them.
One, as you pointed out a few minutes ago, legislation is being proposed that would strictly limit the amount of carbon dioxide that can come out of those coal-burning plants. And so there's a real economic interest in developing a new system to not avoid, but to deal with the greater restrictions on emitting that CO2.
Yes. So now the companies, if with the legislation, then they have to curb the carbon emissions rather than just to show some interest. So that's the...
Well, in addition to doing the research at UWM, of course, you're teaching. Could you talk about what opportunities this field presents for students who may be thinking of careers in this part of engineering?
Yes. I am teaching in mechanical engineering. I'm teaching thermodynamics. I'm also teaching a course called solar engineering. So it's specifically about how to harvest solar energy and convert solar energy, for example, into value-added compounds or heat energy, how to produce hot water from solar heaters, how to use concentrated solar light to produce power. And this, then I incorporate my research of carbon dioxide conversion into fuels by sunlight perfectly, into this the course I'm teaching.
Wow! So you're able to bring both of those together, both of those facts. How do the students react when they begin to see the new age that they may be on the verge of living in with these new systems for creating or dealing with the byproducts of energy?
Yeah, they're very fascinated about this idea. And, actually some students approached me and then, wanted to, participate in research in my laboratory. So, many of my, several undergraduate students worked in my laboratory actually were from the class I was teaching. So you can see that there are a huge interest among the students, and also they can, in the future, they want to pursue, their career in renewable energy. So I see a very, good benefit of both research and teaching in this area.
Well, and not only is it wonderful that that they have this opportunity to learn from one of the people who are at the cutting edge, but from a career standpoint, this sets them up perfectly for those new jobs that will be created down the road.
Yes. So I'm glad also to see that many of our students get good jobs after their graduation in mechanical engineering. They have learned this versatile knowledge in engineering, renewable or energy, sustainability. So it is really good for them, and the employers really appreciate that too.
Well, Ying Li, thank you so much for joining us today. Fascinating conversation. Again, congratulations on your NSF grant, National Science Foundation $400,000 career award, to help you move forward with this new cutting-edge research. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Ying Li, UWM Assistant Professor of Mechanical Engineering, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.